Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is a Sunday morning, March the 22nd, 2015. Wow. Here we are. It goes so fast, and I'm so grateful for your tuning in and listening to this radio program. I have some very simple, direct, beautiful questions for you that three people offered, and I want to invite you to join us. If you ever have a question, something I might say that, might hit the chord for you, or maybe doesn't, and you want explanation, I would love to hear from you. I don't do fighting. I don't try to, have some kind of debate with you over the radio here. So your question has to be succinct. It has to be something that's truly on your mind, something you want answered, truly answered. And if that's where you're at, I would love to hear from you. If you go to the webpage at aspire.org, you'll see at the top contact. Just hit that and send me an email. Any question you have is very important to me. And on top of all of that, if you don't want me to use your name or where you live, that's perfectly fine with me. I have no problem with any of that. I'm just here to be of service to you. And if I can help you in any way, that's what's important to me, not any kind of craziness. And I want to thank my sponsors. I cannot thank them enough for their generosity and their kindness. For those of you listening to this radio program, you would not be hearing it if not for the kindness and the generosity of these people who have done so much to make this possible for you. And I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart for everything they have done for me to allow me to be on the radio. This is a very important thing. Let's go to the first question. What does it mean to be spiritually awakened, as you talk about in your radio and TV programs, Tony? Tony does not tell me where she lives and how she hears us. Tony, awakening, it's a good question. What does it mean? For every master that I've ever been around, they have talked about it as we are asleep. We are deep asleep. We do not see or hear what's really going on in our life. We live as an illusion to ourselves. Our sleep is caused because we are mesmerized by our emotional nature. We are mesmerized by our bodies and our environments that our bodies are in. And we conjure up thoughts. We make up thoughts that have nothing to do with where we truly are in this lifetime. So we go on living as we do, seeking some kind of refuge and survival, trying to find comfort in the body and keep it enough at bay when we're older to where it doesn't hurt so much. And then in our youth to do all the things we do to make it hurt when we get older. We abuse it. And so this is basically our life, our body, other people's bodies, personality, ego, vanity, hubris, emotionality is really what it's all about for us. When a person has had enough of all of this, when they can no longer continue in this ugly landscape of trying to get what they want and have what they believe is theirs and all of that other stuff, we begin to understand ever so slightly within us that there is more to our life than what we believe. There's more to our living than what we want. As Jesus said, that the life is more than meat, the body is more than raiment. A person has to come to this place. Until they do, until you are worn out, until you are absolutely worn out and you are no longer able to draw one more breath without some kind of meaning to it, where you are fatigued by the repetition of yourself upon the face of your own life, Until then, awakening does not occur to us, and we don't even consider it. Awakening is to come to that blessed place where we no longer take for granted everything, where we are no longer looking at things from the point of view of right and wrong and good and bad, where we are no longer trying to get what we want. Spiritual awakening means that we step back from the experience of all of this and realize that it is the direct experience of our life, facing our life, where our living becomes our life and our life supports our living. And this has nothing to do with the idea of our survival or what we get or what we don't get or the quality of what we want and what we don't want and that kind of thing. It has nothing to do with any of that. Spiritual awakening is when I drop the facade. The facade, in my case, that is Gregory. When I am no longer looking at it to perpetuate the myth of my own life, the myth of my emotionality, my thoughts. When I am done perpetuating all of that and manufacturing it in order to sustain the hubris, the ego of me through hubris, that is when I start the process of awakening. This awakening can happen at many different levels, at many different times in the course of a person's lifetime. Most of the time, this awakening occurs when I am seriously considering the whole idea that what I am doing in my living is merely passing time. When you no longer wish to be subject to time itself, when you no longer wish to live as time on a timeline where you are living according to the dictates of what has to be done, when it has to be done, as it has to be done, in the space of fear and anger and maybe even anticipation of wanting more or better things to happen, when you are done with all of that and you no longer seek it, that is when something beautiful happens. You awaken. You begin the process of awakening. This can happen formally by sitting down and meditating and working upon yourself. And sometimes it happens informally where you get an insight where something strikes you very deeply inside and you begin to see the nature of things. I've known people who started their practice just by living alone for many years and all of a sudden it hit them what their life was all about and they began their practice. I've seen people working in their jobs and all of a sudden it dawns on them. There is more to this life than what we are living right now. There is more to our living than what we believe in. And on and on and on this goes. So it can happen at many different levels, Tony. It doesn't have to be that you think you oughta, shoulda, coulda done this. It's not one of those. And if you're looking to enter into awakening, an authentic spiritual practice where one does awaken, has the opportunity to awaken, I should say, and you're looking at it from the point of view of improving your life or replacing something you had in your life with this idea of awakening, it won't work. You have to want it with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength. You must want it more than anything that you have ever desired in your life. It has to go beyond desire. It has to be like the DNA pull to survive. It has to go beyond fight or flight. It has to be a deep and loving movement in you towards awakening, towards the truth, towards the light, like plants that are headed towards the dawn. They see the light of the sun and they move towards it. Sometimes the spiritual path is a dance Sometimes it is a painting. Sometimes it is just a simple gesture of kindness. We all have our deep inner reasons for working on ourselves and awakening. A lot of people can't do it. A lot of people won't do it. They can't and won't do it because they live in a fear, in a hate that is so comfortable for them that to step out of this fear and hate would seem ridiculous. To awaken simply means that the shackles of Greg no longer have an influence in the life I live. When I realize that I am something other than a Gregory, that there's something more profound than a Gregory. And when I am willing to have that direct experience, when I am willing to drop everything for the sake of having that direct experience, the goodness of the heart, the awakening of the soul begins to become very prevalent. And you will have it, you will see it, you will experience it, you will know it. To live in the beauty, not in the confines of my ugliness, but in my beauty, do I awaken. Tony, you ask a beautiful question. I probably didn't do it a great deal of justice, but I hope it helped. Please forgive me. Namaste. People, on rare occasions, ask very beautiful questions like Tony did. And the problem with the answer is that the answer does not ever, ever correlate with the beauty of the question. The answer that I just gave is bumbling and stumbling. It's an answer that can't be answered because awakening is such a personal experience. It's something that goes beyond words and thoughts and beliefs. So it's a very interesting question she asks, and she must be searching. At least I hope she is. Next question comes from Ronald. I've heard everybody talk about it, but I don't get it. Why meditate? Why? Ronald. Well, Ronald, like Tony, if you have to ask that question, then it's not time to meditate, nor would my answer be very powerful for you, very potent. I can give you a reason to meditate. If you need a reason, you're not a meditator yet. It's not time for you yet. Everybody needs a reason. They need a carrot dangling from their forehead, and they have to run towards that carrot. We live a lot in the pursuit of things. And that's the way most people live here in the West. They're always pursuing something, and usually it has to do with money or anything that has to do with our hubris. But there is more in life. And that more can never be understood with the concepts of my genetic thinking, my emotional thinking. I can't appeal to your logic because meditation has nothing to do with logic. I can't appeal to your systematic thinking because meditation is not about systematic thinking. I can't appeal to your desires because meditation has nothing to do with being desirous. Meditation is about finding the gap, the pause, the space between our thoughts. It is about finding that blessed place inside of us where love exists as pure love and only as love. It has nothing to do with gaining or losing, wanting, like we think of in the world. Meditation is a lifestyle. It is not an event. It is not a procedure. It's not a technique. It is a lifestyle. To live meditatively is to live absent of the desire for right, wrong, good, bad. It is to let go of ideals and ideas. It is to release yourself from the emotionality of everything. It is to come into that sacred place where space is so deeply important and there is no sense of time. So when you are truly working upon yourself, when you are truly living inside yourself, beyond the ideals and thoughts, you have come to a very sacred moment. It is the most authentic moment in a human being's life. But most of us do not live from that. We are not interested in that. We don't do that. We are so busy getting and wanting, having and believing, that we miss the whole thing. We miss what it is to love, to give and forgive. There are so many things that embrace meditation. So many beautiful things that embrace meditation. Kindness, love, forgiveness, compassion. Let me say this to you and try to understand. The most precious things in your life will never be understood by conventional thinking. They will never be understood by conventional thinking. No matter what I do, no matter what I think, no matter what I want, conventional thinking will never make it so. The things that make life precious are those things that the mind cannot touch, that thoughts cannot believe in, that the body cannot be aware of. And until I am willing to see that bigger picture, to understand the nature of that bigger picture, I am not going to be able to have those moments of great love. Meditation becomes obvious to the person who begins to seek it. Meditation is the seeking, it is the finding, and it is the losing of what I seek and what I find. It's a contrast, a paradox to human thinking. So it makes it very difficult for most people to understand. And because it is such a discipline and art, most people do not have the patience or the tolerance to go through themselves and to deal with it. They just don't have it. So there is no reason to meditate. I don't want you to think, oh, I have to have a reason to meditate, or I should be meditating, and there is a reason for why I meditate. Not true at all. I meditate because there is no because. I meditate like a giving because I can. I give up the because, as it were. And I enter into life and into meditation, not because it just simply is. Then to take my meditation and what is, so to speak, presented to me in it, and I build my whole life around it. Much like how we built our life around fear and hate. A lot of us have built our life around fear and hate. And so everything is about fear and hate. In meditation, everything is about silence. It is about gentleness. It is about kindness. It is about compassion. It is about not stepping on ourselves to get to ourselves. It is about dropping things quickly, forgiving, always forgiving, always in the let-go mode. That is meditation. That is what it is all about. So, if you are of that elk, Ronald, that is why you meditate, as you ask here. And yet it is not a matter of why. It doesn't sound to me like this is your gig yet. Maybe one day it will be, maybe it won't, I don't know. But I will tell you this, in meditation, there is true appreciation for everything that is so beautiful. I hope one day, in your lifetime, this lifetime, you begin. If I can help, I am here. And please forgive me. Namaste. Everything in our culture has to be pragmatic, it seems. Why do you do this? Why don't you do that? We don't have enough time for ourselves. Why would I bother with meditation? What is it going to give me? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I will never forget the NPR broadcast I heard a few years ago about meditation, where these people from an Zen ashram in Boston were talking about the benefits of it, trying to talk people into it. You can't do that. It just doesn't work that way. So, anyway, what can I say? Last question comes from Karen in San Diego. How do I know like you know? And how do I trust that you know what you know, Karen? Karen, this is an excellent question. I don't know anything. I never sit here and receive your questions and think of an answer. I don't know. And the reason I know is because I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. Things will emerge out of me. I write every day, 7 days a week, working on my commentaries. And I'm always amused and amazed at what comes out of them. This isn't Gregory coming out. It's just coming. And whether it is the flow of consciousness or the unconscious, I don't argue. I don't fight. I point my attentions towards the emptiness that I have achieved, a small amount, and I let it pour out from there. I'm not here to tell you I know. I'm here to share with you what I don't know. Some of the things that come out of me are things that I don't always understand, and Gregory might not agree with all of those things. But there they are, in their full and unpretentious glory, there they are. So I share them with you. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that's about. I really don't know. I don't really care if you trust me. My words and the things I teach are for those who have ears to hear and eyes to see. I'm not here as a salesman. I am not trying to convince you. If I have to do that, then it is not good for either of us. I am just doing what I am doing to be of service to you, to help you in some way, in some manner. Please understand that. I am not trying to make this happen for you and to give you doctrine and creed and belief. You have enough of that, and that is the issue. That is the problem in this world. Too many beliefs, too many doctrines, too many creeds, too many things to conjure up in the brain. I have been this way most of my life. You have to understand that. I was in a childhood that was very normal, I would say, but I still was very unhappy with who I was living with in the form of my mother and father. They were not great parents, either one of them. I had no idea what the hell they were doing. So, deep inside me, I wanted more, because I knew that in my life I would need it. There was a call I felt very profoundly within me. I didn't know what it was. I still don't know what it is. So I can't tell you what it is. But it's there. and it's doing its thing. And I remember seeing, for the first time in my life, my students get so tired of hearing this, Ben-Hur. I was 11 years old. It was for my birthday. I wanted to go see Ben-Hur. Hell, I didn't know why. But that was the first time when Jesus gave Ben-Hur the water in the desert that I ever saw kindness in my life, ever. And I remember crying. I remember sitting there with my friends, tears pouring out of my eyes. They thought I had gone crazy or something, but it was the first moment of my life that I ever saw true kindness. It was from there that I began my journey. So, Karen, I don't have an answer that will satisfy you. I don't ask that you trust me. All I've ever wanted in anyone was their attention for a moment. So if I can get that from you, that's all I really want. And maybe one day you will join us. You too will find that need for kindness. Trust me. I'm out of here. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank my sponsors. And I want to thank life for giving me this time to share with you. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.